Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, a new Tomorrowland entrance, a standoff in Frontierland, Let It Glow, Let It Glow.
More sippers, DVC expands at the resort, Viva Navidad, we discuss Tomorrowland in 1967, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of November 27th, 2019. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Teg Bushman. We'd like to send a shout out and a big thank you to Mike M. for becoming a supporter this week and to all the other patrons for supporting the show. The support helps make DL Weekly possible. Our patrons get some pretty nice perks like access to our Discord chat, live shows, some DL Weekly swag, and more. In fact, we just had some live shows on Sunday. If you'd like to learn more, head on over to dlweekly.net/support.
Well, a big thank you to everyone that has taken the time and has filled out our listener survey. If you have a few minutes, please head on over to dealweekly.net/survey to fill out the listener survey as well. This helps us to understand what the community likes, doesn't like, and how we can make DL Weekly even better for everyone.
Well, does listening to the show make you want to be in the park? If so, contact James, Mike, and Scott over at Concierge and get your next trip planned. They made our trip truly memorable and hassle-free. If you want that same experience, head on over to concierge.com and chat with them about what your dream Disney vacation looks like. They handle everything from Disneyland to Disney World to Disneyland Paris to Alani and even Disney Cruises. They can help you with all of those different places. Remember, there's no additional cost to book through them, and you get a year of touring plans for free when you mention that DL Weekly sent you.
Now let's get to the news.
Well, our first piece of news this week actually isn't a piece of news. It is in the United States. It is the Thanksgiving holiday this week, and we wanted to send a huge thank you to all 135 patrons over the entire course of people of us being on Patreon, of people supporting us. So if you've been with us over 2 years, like some people have, or if you just joined this month, or if you, for one reason or another, you aren't able to support us and you did it one time, we want to send a huge thank you to all of you. Without you guys, it would not make this podcast would not be possible. So thank you guys so much for your support. For those of you that were able, that have been able to continue supporting with us, you're awesome. For those of you that can't for one reason or another, we appreciate that you did at some point. So thank
you. It's really incredible, and it's just so amazing to us. Not only how many people have supported the podcast and supported us financially, but every one of you that listens every single week. It's just, if you, I mean, I know I feel like we've told the story a million times, but if you would have told us that something like this was going to happen when we first started, I definitely wouldn't have believed you. I thought Tag was crazy when he first had this idea, invited me on this journey with him.
Not so crazy now, am I?
So I was amazed that people even listened. And when we got our first patron, I almost fell off my chair. So it's incredible. And the fact that we have now gotten to meet so many of you while in the parks, which is super extra awesome because it's our favorite place, and we get to meet you guys in, I'm assuming, probably one of your favorite places too. But yeah, it's just been incredible. We look forward to many more years with you guys, and hopefully many more meetups and more rides on different attractions and hanging out and doing different things at the parks with you guys. D23 is all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
The best is yet to come, I hope.
Absolutely. And if you've never supported us on Patreon, just thank you for being part of the community, because this community is just amazing.
Yeah. I mean, because even if you're not supporting financially, like I said, totally okay, you know, listening and following us on social media and interacting with us differently on social media, or filling out our surveys, or filling out feedback and reviews for like iTunes and all that stuff. It's just, it's so incredible, you guys. So thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Well, if you were able to join us on our live streams this weekend, first of all, thank you for joining us. But this won't be new news to you. However, Disney has released artwork for the redesigned Tomorrowland entrance that is coming to the land in 2020. The planter areas that are currently grass will be replaced with some colorful flowers and given some height. The top portion of the planters will feature spires which resemble those at the stage back in Tomorrowland.
So, like we said, we talked about this a little bit on our live stream. I know Therese is kind of excited about this.
I am.
I feel like it looks just as closed off as it did before, and before that they tried to do Project Stardust to kind of open it up. There isn't that set of French fry rocks in the middle that says Tomorrowland on it. Fine, I'll give you that. But it still seems closed in. However, I like symmetry, and I think the reason that they had to do this was there is that utility building that they can't move.
Yes.
So to make it not look awkward, I think you had to kind of do something like this. And I guess, like, I like the design. I just still feel like it feels closed in. We'll see. Hopefully with something, if they announce something with Tomorrowland, if they move the Astro Orbiter somewhere different, I think that will make a world of difference. So maybe this is just the very, very beginnings of a new Tomorrowland.
That's kind of what I feel like. And we'll get into this later because our discussion topic this week is a past version of Tomorrowland and probably arguably one of the more favorite versions of Tomorrowland.
More successful, for sure.
But anyway, the entrance, the concept art that they have here looks very reminiscent of what they had back in like this late 60s when they went through and did New Tomorrowland. So that's why I'm excited, because I feel like it's a great nod to the past, and I'm hoping that that means that there is a better future for Tomorrowland. One argument that I will make, though, that I kind of had to think about too, is the argument about it not being as open feeling.
Sure.
I do think visually it's more open, and like we talked about before, maybe footprint wise it isn't too different, but think about like the entrance to say Adventureland or Frontierland and how much more narrow those are in comparison to Tomorrowland. Because you do have a couple of different ways to kind of funnel in, whereas Adventureland or Frontierland or even Fantasyland, the main entrance is there, is just the, you know, kind of the one path. Mm-hmm. So I do still think that it's pretty good flow. Obviously, it's not as open as it had been before they put the Astro Orbiter right there at the front. But I do like it. I just think it's much, visually, it's more appealing to me.
I think you have a point. Yeah, it is visually nice looking. It's way better than those French fry rocks. I will give you that 110%.
Plus color.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we'll see. I mean, the horticulturists at Disney always do a wonderful job. What I guess to go against your argument with like the smaller entrances to like to like Frontierland or like Adventureland is that like it there's like a wide funnel that slowly kind of funnels, where this is like right at the hub. It's like small. So that would be my only argument against what you're saying, is that like Adventureland stuff, you've got over by Jolly Holiday, and then you've kind of got over by Frontierland, and it kind of like slowly gets smaller and smaller until you get to the entrance, where this is like, bam, right at the beginning.
Yeah, that could be. But then again, you do have those kind of side hidden entrances, like
that's
the
true.
One that's in front of the Plaza Inn and, you know, those kind of side entrances. I don't know. It's just, it's different. Let's agree on this. We're glad the rocks are gone.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. This looks way better than the rocks, even if it's not making a huge difference. Although they say it is, so maybe. How about this? We'll have to wait and see how it's executed.
That's what I was gonna say. I'm curious to see what it's like in action, especially since the last time you and I were there together, they had all those lovely construction walls up, which made it even
terrible, more
of a bottleneck disaster.
Especially with the electrical parade. Well, at long last, a show has returned to the Golden Horseshoe in Frontierland. The Dueling Piano Show, titled The Showdown at the Golden Horseshoe, premiered this week. The show combines musical theater, improv, and storytelling, along with music in classical, ragtime, and country and western styles. Currently, the show is performed multiple times each day. Check the Disneyland app or Disneyland.com for specific times.
I am surprisingly and a little maybe oddly excited about this. Like, it's not huge news. It's not like it's a new attraction,
sure,
or, you know, it's not even that big and grand of a show. It's, you know, two guys and their pianos. But I'm really excited because I never would have thought of how well theme-wise Dueling Pianos fits with Frontierland until they announce this. And I think it's going to be fun.
Sure. I'm just happy that there's something in the Golden Horseshoe again, because I feel like it is a travesty to not have something in there, because it's like built for something like this. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice place. I know, like, when we were there, it just happened to be that we showed up at a great time for them to do the previous show that was in there. But I love the fact that there's a nice spot you can go in. And usually the show's timed a little bit longer than it would take for you to, like, have a snack from the stage door cafe that's right there. And, you know, you get that time in the air conditioning, sitting down, and you get some entertainment. There's not a lot of places in Disneyland where you have all of that kind of at the same time. So I like it. I'm glad something's in there.
It's kind of like casual entertainment. It's not like going to see Frozen over in DCA or going to see Mickey and the Magical Map, where you have to kind of, you feel like you have to get there ahead of time. So you get a good seat, and then you're kind of sitting there and you're anxiously waiting, you know.
There's not a bad seat there.
You can just, like we did, just kind of happen upon, and it's more relaxed. I like it.
I feel like that's the best thing about Disneyland is the stuff that you just happen upon. Yes.
Oh, definitely. Well, Downtown Disney is sporting some brightly lit decorations for the holidays this year. The new decor includes more than 200 UV glow trees lit up in shades of blue, green, yellow, orange, and pink. The trees range in size from as little as 4 feet up to an impressive 15 feet. The trees have no decorations on them, but are accompanied by 70 glow rings that hang from large trees in Downtown Disney. The display is titled Let It Glow.
This has been very controversial online, and honestly, I'm not really sure why. You know, I really enjoyed the decorations when we were there that kind of did that weird thing where, like, if you were looking at it from the right angle, it looked like, you know, Donald Duck or Mickey Mouse or Minnie Mouse. Yep. Like, I enjoyed that, but obviously it's Christmas time. In the past, they've done giant ornaments. They've done different Christmas trees. So it's kind of cool that they're doing something different. I like the idea that there's some light. They're using some black light at night to kind of make these colors really pop. In general, I just think they're kind of cool. Like, I don't know why people would be kind of freaking out about it, because there's already so many things around the park that are like traditional Christmassy. Mm-hmm. So why not do something kind of crazy and kind of throwbacky? You know, some people said that this looked like it was from the 80s. I think it's kind of cool. It's different, and I like that.
You know, I guess I have this just odd curiosity about it. Just because I don't, you know, it has been kind of controversial online, and there has been a little bit of negativity, we'll say, regarding the display. And I'm with you. I don't understand it. So I kind of feel like I can't really judge it and see it from their perspective, since I haven't seen it in real life. But I'm excited about it. I think it's fun. I think it's different. It took a lot of time for them to put this together, so you know that it was done right.
Yeah.
I think we just saw that it was took 3 weeks for them to install it.
Yeah.
So yeah, just crazy. I like that it's new. I like that it's different.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why people have beef with it. People, I think there's that no matter what anybody does, if there's any place like Disneyland that's visited by so many people, there's going to be stuff. I mean, no matter what you do, some people are going to be upset. Well, Tomorrowland doesn't have much in terms of decorations for the holidays, but it does have the only dedicated holiday stage show in the park. The new show will feature a dance party with Tomorrowland Terrace with the Tomorrowland Terrace stage decorated for Christmas.
It is decorated, so it's just cute. I don't even know what else to say about it. It's just very cute. It's got like a gingerbread man on it, and it's just very kind of traditional looking, so I feel like it might look a little out of place in the world of Tomorrow and you know, the kind of the futuristic feel that Tomorrowland has, especially since we don't, like you said, have anything else really going on for decorations. But I don't know, I think it's fun. I do like that they still utilize the stage. It feels like they have a lot of different dance parties and fun things like that going on there. At times, I feel like it does feel a little out of place with it being in Tomorrowland, but I'm glad that they're doing something back there with it, because that stage is actually pretty cool.
Dude, it comes out of the ground. How cool is that?
I know.
So it looks like the stage has like some candy canes and lollipops. There's some fruitcakes on the top. There's a chimney. There's some like colorful lighting that's very reminiscent of Christmas. There's a gingerbread man.
Gumdrops. It looks like a giant, almost like a gingerbread stage.
Sure.
I guess would be how I'd describe it.
Yeah. I don't know. I think dance parties, kids especially love dance parties, so why not? I mean, I'm glad that they're using that facility for something, because, you know, back in the day, they used to do a bunch of concerts and stuff there for like teenagers and stuff. And so it's nice that they did something with the little kids. Of course, they used to have the Jedi Training Academy there, and that was discontinued. So
yes.
I think that Tomorrowland, maybe they're not spending any money on Tomorrowland decorations because they're going to do something with Tomorrowland, but fingers and toes crossed. But I don't know. I'm glad that there's some taste of Christmas in there. Do you remember ever reading about the Matterhorn, how they made like the Matterhorn into a Christmas tree because they put like that giant star at the top for a few years?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess they could, like, with the projection mapping technology, they could turn the Matterhorn into a tree.
They could.
Let's not give them ideas.
Why not?
I don't know.
Well, with the hype the Mandalorian has brought to the Star Wars universe, there is no lack of interest in any Mandalorian. A new Jango Fett Stein is available at the Galactic Grill in Tomorrowland. The Stein is the signature helmet of Jango, sporting the blue coloring. The Stein is priced at $13.99 and includes coffee, hot tea, or beverage at the time of purchase. It can also be ordered through mobile ordering.
I liked this, that you could like mobile order it, because I know like when we were there, I guess I didn't use a lot of mobile ordering at different places.
Well, thankfully, we didn't have to. The lines weren't
That's true.
Crazy.
But, like, there was that popcorn bucket I wanted, and I think that, like, I didn't even know it was maybe an option to do it. But I guess it was an outdoor vending cart, so they don't really have mobile ordering.
Yeah,
but,
yep.
This looks cool. I mean, it's not, like, anything, like, spectacular, I guess. Although, with the Mandalorian, wouldn't it be kind of cool if they had, like, versions? So, like, they have a Jango Fett. They'd have, like, one that was green, like Boba Fett. Maybe they have one that's silverish that's, like, the Mandalorian.
Maybe that's in the works.
Because that would be cool. Like, collect them all, kind of.
It could be.
That would be cool.
Very cool.
Well, maybe Star Wars isn't your beverage holder of choice, but something more animated is. Well, there is a new Sven sipper mug that is available for $18.99 at Idlewise Snacks in Disneyland. The most disturbing part of this sipper is that Sven's head is removable to fill with a beverage, making him into a headless reindeer.
So Halloween hasn't quite gone past the parks. It's kind of like, it's like Jack Skellington and his crew has had their hands in this.
Sure. This one is cool. He looks like he's like fallen on the snow or something.
Yeah, he looks adorable. So I am not excited about the Mandalorian mug, but I am very excited about this very adorable Sven sipper. He looks like he just, you plucked him out of the movie. He looks great. But yeah, he's like sitting down. I don't know. Not even like a dog. I don't even know how to describe his adorable pose, but it looks like he just kind of like plopped down on the snow and is about to like sing a duet or something with his. Yeah. Anyways, but he just looks so cute. And I'm not even really, I mean, I know that a lot of people are worried about the fact that you have to take his head off to be able to fill the cup. I still think he's just super adorable. I'm not even bothered by that.
So the cool thing about when you take his head off is part of his like fur or mane or whatever that comes down over the collar where it kind of just disconnects. When you take it off, there's actually like quite a bit of like neck kind of there without the fur. So the fur actually covers that. So it's kind of like a good overlap. It looks like it holds a lot of beverage.
It does. It looks like it holds a lot more than that Jack sipper did.
Oh, definitely. I would get this one. I'm not a huge, by the way, for people who missed the live stream, I think I should confess this to the wider podcast audience. Teresa and I both, not together, but separately, we saw Frozen 2 this week. Mm-hmm. And I am not a Frozen fan. I know if you've listened to the podcast for any amount of time, you know this. I actually thought it was pretty good. It was pretty good. I don't think there's any breakout songs like Let It Go, for me anyway. And I think that there were some stunning visuals. There's some magic scene with Elsa that looked amazing. The water, there's a scene that like comes in over the water to Arendelle and it looks real. And I thought that was amazing. I'm also happy because I forget, because it's computer animated, I forget that it's not Pixar. That's Disney animation.
That's true.
So I was pleasantly surprised at the beginning of the movie where it was the Disney animation thing with Steamboat Willie playing. I was like, oh, it's Disney animation. So, but I liked it. I think as somebody who doesn't like Frozen, I would recommend this movie to anybody. What did you think, Teresa?
So I'm with Tag. I really did enjoy this movie. I think It was just a very good continuation of the story. I wasn't too excited by what I saw on previews. For some reason, nothing really sparked my interest there. But Vern and I happened to have Thursday evening off, so we figured, hey, we've got the night. Let's go check out Frozen 2. Why not? And he and I also were both very pleasantly surprised. It was both beautiful visually, and I really enjoyed the music. I just thought the music was gorgeous. I think there's a couple of songs that really kind of stood out to me. When I first watched Frozen, the first one, I enjoyed Let It Go, but I didn't think it was going to be quite the popular hit that it is. So clearly I was wrong. So I don't know. So I think time will tell if one of the songs kind of becomes the like big thing, like, you know, if there's another big song that comes out of it. But just overall, the music was just beautiful throughout the whole film.
Non-spoiler alert, there is a scene with Olaf where he talks about the original Frozen.
Olaf. Yeah.
And it is amazing. Like, I want to go see it again just for that scene because I thought it was so funny. Also, there is a scene at the end of the credits that you should also definitely stay for.
So I got excited when you talked about Olaf, so I'm sorry.
Sure.
But I really, I don't know. I enjoyed Olaf more in this film.
I did too.
So he's just so cute. Mm-hmm. And it was, I don't know. They just did a really good job with Olaf.
They did.
I don't want to spoil the movie for anyone, but yeah, make sure if you have a chance to go out and see it, it was definitely worth it.
I think in general, they did a pretty good job just with the story in general. Like, I liked the idea of like, you'll just have to go see it. There's a lot of cool stuff in there. Go see it. Definitely.
So, speaking of the new Frozen, Disney made sort of a controversial move. The Anna and Elsa outfits have actually been updated to the ones worn at the end of the new movie in the parks. We're not going to spoil anything here, but some people are upset and feel that maybe the outfits are a little bit too revealing, that it might spoil the movie for others. My take on it being somebody that did see the film and has seen what outfits they chose from the new film, I did not think it spoiled anything.
Mm-hmm.
I think you had to be pretty darn savvy to figure out what it spoiled, and perhaps maybe I'm just not that savvy. I just took it as I honestly just thought of it as new outfits and didn't realize if there was any significance in particular. To me, it didn't scream any like,
sure,
movie is ruined for everyone, mm-hmm, don't go see it type thing. So I took it with a grain of salt.
I feel like if you're a Frozen super fan, you would have already seen the movie now anyway. But if you're a Frozen super fan, maybe you'd catch something and get some type of spoilery kind of thing from it. But honestly, when I saw this story and people were talking about how people were upset about it, I was like, oh, I mean, I guess now that you say something, sure, but...
I'm surprised that they decided to change their outfits that quick after it, and I'm kind of surprised a little bit at the outfit choices that, they had a lot of really beautiful outfits in this film, I felt, so I'm surprised that they chose these particular outfits ones in the park, just because
they're princesses, and so they picked the most princessy looking outfits. Because some of their other outfits were not as princessy.
I don't know. Maybe.
I think that they like the idea of, and little girls, I think, like the idea of like the like dress, like the other princesses. So
they were very beautiful dresses too. That's true.
Well, Latino culture and traditions will be coming to Disney California Adventure for the holidays. Paradise Gardens will host colorful papel picado banners, piñatas, and a number of festive accents. Panchito from Mexico, Jose Carioca from Brazil, and Donald Los Esperon at the Disney Viva Navidad street party with mariachi and samba music and folklorico dancers. And 12-foot-tall Moiganga puppets of Santa and Mrs. Claus. I apologize. I do not speak Spanish. I'm so, so sorry to everybody who probably does. There will also be some fun food options as well. Which, coming from the fact that we just watched the Three Caballeros.
I got excited when seeing the Three Caballeros in costume in this. We did, actually. That was one of our patron perks, as a monthly hangout with Tag and I. And we actually we choose a movie, which has been fantastic, by the way, with Disney Plus, because I feel like the options are literally endless because we have the entire everything at our fingertips. But anyway, so we decided to do something a little bit further back, and we watched The Three Caballeros. And I feel bad to admit that I had never actually watched the film all the way through. And it was very interesting. And I enjoyed it because I've always been drawn, and I do like those characters, even though I did not know anything really about them. I guess it's just, how they, you know, how they're portrayed and the bright, vivid colors. And they always look like they're having a great time. And it's always kind of like a little party with them. They look like a lot of fun. The movie, we don't have to get into that. But anyway, so yeah, so I was just excited, like, oh, I now know these guys and I know where they're, you know, I know where they're from. I know how they tie in. So that was a little Disney nerd moment for me. So let's go back to talking about the street party.
So the street party looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. I actually am more excited about the food because I really like Mexican food a lot. And so some of the options that are going to be there are going to be like a plant-based chili relleno, a torta al pastor. And I love al pastor like tacos, so a torta would be amazing. Oh, house-made pozole, street-style tacos, and more. Oh,
yum.
I want to be there. I want to be there eating this Mexican food because I love Mexican food. In fact, now I want to go to our local Mexican restaurant and get some El Pastor.
So, side note, it has kind of to do with this. I just get so excited when they have something fun going on at the Paradise Gardens. I just really love that they're using this otherwise, in my opinion, underutilized space. So the fact that we just had all the different stuff back there for Dia de los Muertos and the different things to do with the movie Coco that was going on back there. I don't know. I just love that they have stuff going on, and it's hands-on family fun activities that they have going on back there. And I think it's great.
Yeah, I think so too.
Galaxy's Edge is scheduled to get some new droids, just not in the way that we would all hope. New droid-themed Coke carts should be installed in Batuu this week. These new carts are very similar to what has already been rolled out in Florida's version of the land. Now, if only they could get some interactive droids walking around the area.
Yeah, this has been kind of a promise of Galaxy's Edge since the beginning, that there was going to be droids walking around that you could interact with and people in the land. I didn't really get any of this when we were there, that like, depending on how well you did on Millennium Falcon, Smuggler's Run, like they'd treat you different in the land, and I didn't get any of that.
No.
So I'm not sure, you know, it's a bunch of promises that kind of didn't come to fruition yet, and hopefully they'll add some of that stuff. I did hear online that there was somebody who either was a cast member or had a friend who's a cast member, and these have been on property for a couple weeks now, and they've been testing them. And they said that one of the cast members or this person had walked by and it interacts with you a little bit. So like the droid will turn and like beep and bloop and everything
fun.
At you.
Yeah.
So I guess it's kind of like a hybrid from things. Somebody else also posted, which I thought was silly because people get silly and snarky on the internet. And they said like, we need interactive droids. Let's add it to a merchandise cart because you got to monetize it somehow. So I don't know.
See, I'm just excited because when I first saw it, I felt that they could have used the droid as like a decorative thing for the cart. So I'm excited that they do something and they aren't just there to look the part, I guess would be a good way of saying it.
Yeah. It's better than nothing, I guess. I'd rather have steps towards something cool. Wouldn't it be neat if you could order like a Coke and then like it'd be like, and then like its little hatch would open and like the Coke would come out?
That'd be great.
Like that would be such a cool thing that people, that would sell a lot of Coke because people would be like, come look at this, and they
would. Well, even if you somehow paid through the droid, you can, I don't know,
put your card in like a little reader, like help me Obi-Wan Kenobi. Yep. I'm telling you. Well, more Disney Vacation Club rooms will be coming to Disneyland, this time in a new tower at the Disneyland Hotel. The Orange County Register reports that Disney has filed permits with the city of Anaheim to build a 12-story, 350-room addition. The new rooms aren't scheduled to be available until 2022. There are currently only 71 DVC rooms at the resort, currently located in the Grand Californian.
That's just crazy to me that we're going from 71 to a whole tower.
Over 400.
Yeah, that's just total. I mean, that's great and that's awesome. The only thing that I'm nervous about, and of course we do not know these statistics, but I would love to know how frequently the current 71 rooms are booked. And I'm slightly worried that if these extra rooms that they're building are going to solely be for the Disney Vacation Club, how often are they going to be vacant versus how often are they going to be used? That's my one concern. But then again, it's more hotel space, really long run. If they do decide to keep these all separate for Disney Vacation Club and they aren't filling the rooms, then I would assume it wouldn't be that hard to convert them to just normal hotel, you know, regular hotel rooms for normal Disneyland hotel guests so that it's not just empty space. But who knows?
So the way this works is if you are a member of a Disney Vacation Club thing, you can stay at any of the Disney Vacation Club properties. You just have to, like, sure, book time. So the fact that they want to add more is like, hey, you've been at Disney World, you've been at Aulani, you've been wherever. Mm-hmm. You can now book more rooms at Disneyland, sure, to kind of move people around, which is nice. The other thing that Disney actually does is they will allow people to book the DVC units, but they're through much higher rates, and they're, okay, usually listed as Disney Deluxe Villas.
Gotcha.
And
okay,
so they cost quite a bit. It is a lot cheaper if you want to get in one of those rooms to rent points from a current Disney, mm-hmm, Vacation Club, mm-hmm, member, and that is something that, like, producer James and I were talking about doing if we go to Disney World again. Is for I believe we looked at like an eight night visit at the, There's the Bay Lake Tower at the Contemporary, which I've always wanted to, it's a, mm-hmm, bucket, mm-hmm, list to stay at the Contemporary. But for an 8-night stay, it's a little over, I want to say, $1,100 or $1,200, which is really good for a Disney. If you were to pay regular just hotel rates there, you're over like $2,000 or $3,000. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you'd rent points for so much cheaper for that time. So maybe, you know, maybe this will allow people to be able to afford to stay at a Disneyland hotel when they wouldn't have been able to, because they can rent some points.
That'd be good.
Or if you're in the Disney Vacation Club, maybe those 71 rooms have been filling up, especially around times like Christmas or the summertime. Right. So now you'll have more options and can go during the peak periods. I don't know. You know, we talk about the fact that you just got your annual pass and whatnot. Is something down the road? Is that something you ever considered, was a Disney Vacation Club?
You know, I guess I've just never looked into it. Just because at this time in my life, unfortunately, I don't have nearly the amount of vacation time I would love, right, to be taking from my real 9-to-5 daytime, sure, job. But I mean, eventually I think that would be great. Really, ideally, I would just want to live there so I could, right, just always go.
Now, I will say, when it comes to Disney Vacation Club, and maybe one of these times we should have a discussion topic about the Disney Vacation Club. If you like that idea, let us know. Feedback at dlweekly.net. But basically, Disney Vacation Club, when I've listened to financial people on the radio and stuff, the Disney Vacation Club is the only timeshare that they recommend that, like, actually will hold its value.
Wow.
So, not a bad bet.
Well, now we take a trip to Trivia Land, where producer Vern tries to stump us with some Disney trivia. He's going to read us the questions, we're going to try to answer them, and then Vern will give us the correct answers after our discussion topic. So what do you have for us this week, Vern?
I really have a barking dog. It's one thing that I have. A couple questions. Going back to our recent trip to the parks this past, when did we go? August, yeah. So August 2019, when we were in the parks. So all of these questions will pertain specifically to that trip. If anything has changed, and if somebody in the listeners says, hey, that's not the correct answer anymore, please feel free to let us know. But at the time that we were there, these were the things that I was able to notice and write down. Question number one. In the queue for Indiana Jones, which, of course, is the first ride that you go on, especially if you're in the parks with Teresa.
And Tag.
There is a Glenn Miller song that you can hear playing through the speaker system. What song is it?
Oh. What is the name?
That's what I'm asking.
No, because it's that... Dun, 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 right? Like that Glenn Miller, because it's like the old-timey sounding song that plays in the queue.
Glenn Miller's orchestra, yeah, was a jazz.
I'm making
orchestra.
Sure that, like, yep, we're on the same page. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I have no idea what the name is.
I know it. I can hear it in my head. Do we have a hint?
Bumpy.
That has nothing to do with the song.
I know. That's my favorite part of it. I love the...
He's making
the
little bumpy.
Bumpy. That's my favorite part of... I love watching that little... I don't know. What it's not really the safety spiel. Kind of.
Yeah, I'd call it the safety spiel.
I love
spiel.
It. Oh, I love it so
okay,
much.
Okay, for a hint, most people think Glenn Miller and they think jazz and they think kind of upbeat. This is one of his slower paced songs.
I still got nothing.
And it's one of my personal favorites of his.
It really makes me mad because, like, I know somewhere in this noggin, the title is bounced around because I like that song. And I think I looked for that song after going to the parks one time.
You should have asked me. I have it on CD and iTunes.
I have it in my iTunes.
Do you have time to look it up while we're on air?
I do.
Oh. Especially since we're not live on air anyway.
In my library.
So you're going to let him look it up and answer it?
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. Is it in the mood? Well, nope. You don't tell me.
Okay. So is that your official guest tag, in the mood?
I feel like it should be because that's the only Glenn Miller thing I have.
This is so cheap.
Yes. This plays in the queue.
It does?
Yes. It plays outside. It's on the car radio as you're like in the outside queue.
And yeah,
it's like,
okay. So cheating. Such cheating. Where's James? I'm calling James.
No, hold on.
Da da da. Da da da. I know that song.
Is that not what I just played?
That is what you just played.
So I'm going to say in the mood.
I'm going to say tag cheated and looked it up.
I looked up because I said I have that specific track that I'm thinking of from Glenn Miller in my thing. And so I looked, but I will see if I'm right.
So I can say I have a book that contains the answer. Let me go grab it.
And as this week's Trivia Master, I will allow half credit.
Thank you.
Open book test this week.
What?
Open book?
As you enter the park at Disneyland, you can see on the building above the Flowers of Mickey, the population and the elevation of Disneyland. Respectively, what are they?
The elevation's like 157 feet or something like that. And the population changes, I think, right now. I think it's 8.5 million. No.
What is the population based on? Cast members?
No,
visitors?
No, the population is based on guests. So I think it's more than that.
I don't know.
I'm just going to go with 8.5 million because that's what the first thing I said. But 157 feet, I'm pretty sure is the elevation. It's 150 something feet. I'm pretty sure. I want to say. I feel like in my mind's eye, that's what I see. Do you have a guess for the elevation or the population?
Are you going to look it up on Google?
I did not.
Look it up on one of your photos that you took once.
He's not even touching his computer. No. Do you have a guess?
No, I don't have a guess. I already said that. I don't know.
It's a number. You can make up something.
I have no idea. I've never even looked at the sign.
Really?
I get too tunnel vision. I'm too excited and I just like go through.
I guess I have an unfair advantage because the train station is one of my favorite buildings in the park.
Yeah.
So.
No, I just get too excited. Even when I'm like in the train station waiting for the train, I don't wait in the building. I wait on the platform. Anxious.
Well, the sign's outside. It's not in the building. It's on the building.
Where is it on the building?
It's on the side facing the train. It's the one that says Disneyland on the side. It has the population.
If I'm standing waiting for the train, I can't see it because it's
right
in a place I can't stand.
Sure.
So your guess is a no guess.
My guess is a no guess.
Okay. All right. Question number 3. I am sitting down in Lafitte's Landing. Where am I? For clarification, Lafitte is spelled L-A-F-I-T-T-E apostrophe S. Lafitte's Landing is where I'm sitting. Where am I?
I think Lafitte's Landing is the... Because it's Lafitte's... Oh, God. There's two places that it could be. It's either...
You get to choose one.
I know. It's either...
And you can't Google them.
It's either boarding Pirates of the Caribbean or... It's boarding the rafts to Tom Sawyer Island.
What's your guess?
My brain says to go with Pirates, but my gut says to go with rafts to Tom Sawyer Island. So I'm going to go with the rafts to Tom Sawyer Island.
I'm like darn confident on this one, and I'm going, it's the loading area of Pirates.
Okay.
Okay. And for a bonus question.
You don't have
question.
A picture that you took yourself in? Sorry.
I wasn't cheating.
And for your bonus question this week.
Wait a minute, was that 4?
Well, because I counted population and elevation.
Sure.
So, bonus question. When in Disneyland, what percentage of the time does Teresa choose the fast line in the queue?
Oh,
25%,
man.
B, 50%, or C, 100%?
25%.
I'm going to say probably 20. Yeah, maybe 50.
25%.
I wasn't doing too bad less. I'm going to go 50%.
I feel like we were joking with you about this, that no matter what line you chose, it was always the wrong one. So I feel like it's going to be low.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm going to say 25%.
I'm going to be confident and say 50. I'm impressed that you figured this out, actually.
How was he doing?
I was keeping hash marks. Like, after we first started picking on you, I started keeping hash marks.
These are all the notes he was taking.
Yeah, but I
still don't know how many chickens there are or how many skeletons. Or we were trying to figure out, there was something he was counting.
And no, seagulls.
Got other people involved in helping him count.
And we joked about that it was lanterns or chickens.
There's so many things in Pirates that you could be counting.
It's true.
Blackened roof tiles. I don't know.
Oh, that was a good... I should have done that.
Black.
That would have taken you a long time because they're all black.
Excuse me, can you please stop the boat? Yeah. I can't get an accurate count.
We would have just had to do pirates like another 10 times. So
for this week's discussion topic, it was actually inspired on the new entrance to Tomorrowland and kind of how it's a throwback to one of the older versions of Tomorrowland. So this week we are going to discuss the new Tomorrowland of 1967.
I will stand by the fact that as far as Disneyland Tomorrowlands go, the new Tomorrowland of 1967 was probably my favorite Tomorrowland because, of course, they added my favorite The People Mover.
Lots of fun stuff.
Yeah, so like it really became the land on the move, and I really liked that. So, of course, as everybody knows, Tomorrowland was one of the original lands of the park, and was there for opening day. There was some changes between 1955 and 1967, right? Like
nothing too major.
Nothing major.
This was definitely, I feel, the first big change that Tomorrowland saw, and really that the park itself saw. But yeah, Tomorrowland was very different then. Autopia was there, but the rest of the land was sort of kind of sparse feeling, and it just had various walkthrough exhibit type attractions. In fact, you know, Autopia was kind of the main draw, I feel, and a lot of people felt that that was their favorite part of Tomorrowland was the Autopia. But anyways, for years, Walt felt that this part of the park was underfunded, and just he never felt that it was finished. Tomorrowland, if you kind of go back in the history of the park, was one of the last parts to be built, and at that point they had run out of money long before they got there. So they actually got some sponsors to kind of help them with that part of the park. But anyway, so Walt just always kind of felt that it was not what he had envisioned. So he did want to build a much more elaborate land.
Yeah, so one of the things that actually kind of, and this wasn't 1967, but like from opening to 1967's new Tomorrowland, there were some things that were kind of added, but it was only kind of like on the periphery of the land. So basically you had like the Matterhorn got added in 1959, of course the monorail got added in 1959, and the submarine voyage. So those were all kind of like off to the side though. Like you said, a lot of the same like exhibit-y kind of stuff. Things that had topics like dairy, aluminum, and plastic, like not that exciting.
The house of the bathrooms of the future,
right?
And all sorts of interesting houses. The house of the future.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of future things,
right? Walt, you know, as we've talked about before, and anybody who's ever read anything about Walt knows, you know, he liked trains. Obviously, he liked the monorail. He liked the Autopia. So basically, a lot of things that are movement. So he was fascinated with transportation, and so they wanted to kind of design Tomorrowland to be kind of, science and the universe of the future, and the theme to kind of that they kind of like went with to try to get ideas to come up with this new thing was the world on the move, which I think totally, like, when I think back to when I first went there and a lot of this was still in place, that's what I thought. You had the Astro Orbiter moving, you had the People Mover, of course you had the monorail, which was there, all this stuff moving.
Right. That's the one word that I hear people when they talk about what they feel the park is missing now is they feel like it's missing movement. They feel like it's missing energy. And that's exactly what this version of Tomorrowland brought. So this was, the theme nickname was perfect. But part of this too is kind of Tomorrowland centered, but kind of not, because at this time too, Walt's big dream at this point was to create and build a prototype community called Epcot. And transportation was a major focus of Epcot. So really, it only made sense to test some of those new systems on a smaller scale at Disneyland, aka the People Mover. So these systems would also double as attractions, and it was a total win-win. But we need to also kind of take a step back and remember that there was a lot going on for Disney in the 60s. Pirates of the Caribbean and Haunted Mansion were in the works and being created. The very secret Florida plans were still going and just becoming more and more complex. Walt was traveling back and forth between the two places, between California and Florida. We also had the World's Fair going on, and so they were creating these attractions, and then during the 60s were the World's Fair, so then they had the attractions going, but that required tremendous time and resources, and then also plans for new Tomorrowland, and that required just a crazy amount of advanced technology, mostly computer technology needed for Spaceport, which was Walt's vision that later became Space Mountain.
So, I mean, this is kind of a sad, depressing part of this story. So, you know, we're getting to the second half of the 60s. A lot of this stuff, like you said, you know, they're working really hard on Pirates of the Caribbean. They're still trying to figure out Haunted Mansion. The 64, 65 World's Fair, they're kind of wrapping up finally, spending all this time and energy on it. And then, of course, Walt passes away in 1966. Although he got to experience and enjoy his hard work that he did for the fair with, you know, all of his Imagineers, Pirates, Haunted Mansion, and the new Tomorrowland, all he never actually got to see them functioning in a full way. I do believe he got to see some test run-throughs of Pirates because it was kind of along, but he didn't get to see the guests enjoy it, basically. And then, of course, we talked a little bit about Epcot. Of course, he never saw Epcot, and Walt's dream of Epcot never actually came to be in the way that he kind of envisioned it as a community or a city of tomorrow. And it's just but I know there's a lot of Epcot fans out there, but like it's just a theme park now, and it's not really this amazing utopian community that it could have been if Walt would have been able to see it through to completion. So, of course, if you guys have been watching the Imagineering story, you know that after Walt passed away, there was a lot of people that felt very lost because he was very visionary. He was so involved in every aspect of the company that when it came down to things needing to be decided upon, Walt decided those things. So when you lose the person who knew to say yes or no to things, who becomes that? And sometimes they get paralyzed with, you know, the saying, what would Walt do? And there's still people nowadays that use that online. But they decided that the construction for the new Tomorrowland should move forward, which I think was a good choice.
I think so, too. Well, new Tomorrowland, of course, needed a fresh new look. The colors that they chose were kind of space age theme, mostly white, but everything really had a great mid-century style. The architecture was a great blend between function and form, and the facade of each attraction just fit so well with its surroundings. But many themes were present in the new lands: inner space, outer space, liquid space, progress of electricity, transportation. But everything, like we said, everything just really fits seamlessly together, and it all fit within the general world on the move theme. And it's kind of one of those things that if you take a step back and look at Tomorrowland how it is now, it doesn't fit seamlessly together. It just kind of feels like there's different bits and pieces that are just kind of smooshed together and they're trying to make it work. So, I mean, I think this was huge that this all just was so, like, not only did it, like, make sense together, everything made sense, everything looked correct together. I mean, everything about it just, it was like the perfect puzzle.
Yeah, I'll tell you, you know, when we're talking about the design of the land, one thing that even in the 80s when I went there and looking back on it back then, and even some, like, Magic Kingdom kind of kept this kind of, because Magic Kingdom opened just a few years later, and they kind of went with this same kind of design, is, you know, it was that mid-century modern kind of design. And actually, I think that, like, for a land like Tomorrowland, I think if they were to go back to that kind of a design, I think that people would still really react well to it for the land of tomorrow.
I think so, too, because, I mean, I get why they chose that design back in the 60s. I can also kind of see why they decided to go away from that design more recently when they redid, what was it, in the 90s was the next big overhaul. I understand why they kind of went away from that, but I have a, I do see a very strong argument as to how it would make very, it would make a lot of sense for them to go back to that kind of look.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking at, we'll put a link in the show notes to, there's a website called Imagineering Disney. Oh,
beautiful.
Yeah. They've got this really great map that shows basically that there's Disneyland. Hold on. So there's different colors. If you look at this map, there's like things that are in teal, and that represents all the stuff from New Tomorrowland of 1967, and everything else is like today's version of Tomorrowland. Mm-hmm. So looking at this map, it's kind of amazing to see, because there was like Adventure Through Innerspace, which like you can kind of see how that's overlaid with Star Tours. Mm-hmm. You could see where the People Mover kind of went, that there was a Tomorrowland stage kind of off to the side. There was actually two stages in Tomorrowland at one point. Yep. You know, so there was a lot of this cool stuff that kind of like went together, and you could see the original path of like the Autopia from this time frame, and of course today's. So it's really kind of cool to see how things have, like, you know, they always say things of like, there's things that, as much as things change, it stays the same, so you can kind of see how things are similar. But I just, something about this makes me really miss Tomorrowland of my childhood, I guess.
If you're one to go down Disney rabbit holes, this one, I was so sucked in when we found this website, and it's got so many beautiful photos. Mm-hmm. There's concept art, there's photos from when it actually like opened, there's construction photos, there's even footage from, they kind of had this like opening day celebration, they've got footage from that, and it's just really, really cool. It's a Tomorrowland that I never got to experience, but you know, you feel like you did experience it with how all of these images captured what the land was like.
So even though like there was a bunch of different attractions, which I actually kind of find this fascinating, what I'm about to say. So like they have all these, you know, they have the whole land that has kind of a cohesive look to it, but each attraction kind of had its own story and was given to you a little bit at a time as you got closer. So it didn't really clutter the entrance or make it, you know, tacky or anything like that. But, as you got closer to each different attraction, the theme kind of built and built in subtle ways, but it was very effective. And then once you got inside the attraction, you were totally immersed in the experience. So, and then as you left the attraction, it kind of did the same thing in reverse. It's almost like Main Street, where mm-hmm. you come onto Main Street, and as you walk in, it makes the way they do forced perspective, it makes it seem very long. But at the end of the night, when you're coming back the other way, it makes it seem very short. So mm-hmm. like you can get to the exit faster, even though it's same distance. I like this idea that like, that you could take a whole land and have a cohesive look, but like as you start looking closer at the details of, let's say you're going to Adventure Through Innerspace, you kind of get those little details more and more until you get into the attraction. Like that's Imagineering mastery right there.
Mm-hmm. I do feel like we have a couple places, you know, some places I can think of in the park now that do this.
Sure.
Adventureland, I think, is a really good example of that, just because the land itself is a very cohesive theme and feel, but then as you're, you know, when you're near the Tiki Room, you can hear the music, and you can kind of hear the kind of, I don't know, Polynesian style of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. You've also got those statues that kind of come out and do stuff in the waiting area. But then more so though is just thinking of the queue for Indy, mm-hmm. and how that kind of, when you start at the queue, you feel like you're in the jungle, and then you kind of go past where the cast members usually stand to make sure that you're, you know, if you're tall enough to ride the attraction or not, that kind of, once you get past that threshold, then suddenly you see this big cool temple and you feel like you've just discovered something. Then you just kind of get to explore and dig deeper and deeper and deeper into this big temple,
sure,
while you're in the queue, which, as we've talked about, we love because it's immersive. To be interactive, and it's very immersive. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you really have the same feeling when you leave. I feel like that's kind of hard to do, because after getting on that attraction, you're just so like excited and mm-hmm. so whatever. They could put anything in front of you and you might not notice it, because you're just so thrilled and so just on this, like, I don't know, you're running on adrenaline or something. You're just so excited and so excited, and you're just talking to everybody about what you just did. So you, like I said, you could probably put a a big snake right at the end, and sure, people wouldn't even notice. But anyways, so but so I do love that they also that we do still see this in the parks today.
So let's talk about something else here with this whole renovation of Tomorrowland. So the new Tomorrowland opened on July 2nd, 1967. And most of the structures that were there previous to this were demolished, which is kind of what we are hoping for a now Tomorrowland renovation to make way for these new and improved attractions. So at the time, it cost more than $20 million. And if we remember back, just 12 years earlier in 1955, all of Disneyland was $17 million. Yeah. So they spent a lot of money on this. So, you know, but I think it's worth it. But I think that's what you got to do now, even.
It lasted, though, because we a lot of these buildings that they built then are still standing.
It's true.
The People Mover tracks, still there. The Inventions building, still there.
Yep, yep. Yeah, and that's why they need to level some things, because I think and I know this is a little off topic, but like attractions of today are different and laid out differently and require different things than attractions of the late 60s. So I think that they need to go through and they need to bulldoze some of these buildings and just not be limited by we have to fit it in this building.
Yeah, that's I was going to say. I couldn't imagine. I mean, first of all, I couldn't imagine being an Imagineer and having to dream these things up and then execute how to make them reality.
Or literally execute buildings in the land.
Yeah, but think about having to do that, plus then having, like, making sure that it fits into this one particular box.
Sure.
That's just got to be hard, because I would think that, you know, all show buildings have got to be unique to whatever show that they are housing. There might be some that you can kind of interchange, like maybe dark rides would be easier to interchange, but like Indy, like you couldn't just kind of shove something back into it. You know, I'm going back on
Indiana Jones. Right.
You couldn't just shove something back there. Or Pirates. What would you, you know, if you had to swap out Pirates and suddenly make that something else, like it'd be really difficult to do something completely different than what it already is.
Haunted Mansion. Yeah. Your entrance is a mansion. Like, how are you going to make that anything else?
Splash Mountain. I mean, so many things. You know, it'd be very hard creatively to try and
that's really interesting.
Mush it back into that spot.
You touched on something I never thought of before.
Yeah.
Tomorrowland is the only area, except for maybe Fantasyland, there are attractions that you couldn't, like that you could put anything in there because they're just buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not highly themed and immersive like a Splash Mountain or like a Haunted Mansion or a Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, like, or Star Wars, Galaxy's Edge. Like, there's nothing, you can't do anything else with Galaxy's Edge. Like, you couldn't re-theme Galaxy's Edge to be something else because it's too
not
Star
easily.
Wars.
No. Yeah.
So you look at Tomorrowland, and Tomorrowland's just a lot of kind of boxy, plain buildings with things inside of them.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Tomorrowland needs more imaginative things that, like, look like, like, are really immersive instead of just, like, buildings
like
that have things inside of it.
That's like a giant microscope. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, like the Astro Orbiter when it was up on top of the thing, or, like, the People Mover, like, those things looked, and again, those are, like, outdoor attractions, like the monorail. Mm-hmm, like, it's not an attraction building or a show building.
Mm-hmm.
But still, like, something, that's something they haven't done. Because every Tomorrowland's kind of like that, except for, like, Space Mountain. Everything kind of has, like, that plain building look.
Yeah.
Hmm. So anyway, let's talk about what actually happened in those 2 years.
Yeah, so what happened in Tomorrowland in 66 and 67? You know, we're talking about, you know, the feel of the park was different, and they were kind of going to this centralized theme of movement and how it just had this totally different feel and look than what it had before. And really, the crazy thing is there were only two brand new attractions that were added. One was, of course, the People Mover.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other was Adventure Through Inner Space. We did have an attraction that was brought in from outside of the park. Of course, we were able to adopt the Carousel of Progress after it had its stay over at the World's Fair.
Did you ever see this attraction in Disney World?
I have not ever experienced the Carousel of Progress or the People Mover. I have not experienced either in Disneyland or Disney World.
I've only experienced Carousel of Progress once at Disney World, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Although I did feel like it was time for refurbishment. I felt like some of the things weren't at peak efficiency.
Sure.
But I did enjoy that attraction. And they are keeping it there. In fact, they just did a new paint job for the outside of it in Disney World. So if anybody's interested in seeing this attraction, it was actually the attraction that was brought from Disneyland. I'm sure that they updated it when they moved it, but I'm just saying, like,
physically it's the same thing.
It's the same. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Nope, that's fine.
They didn't like create a brand new one. They just moved pieces over and they updated it. So three attractions were improved and renamed. So Rocket to the Moon became Flight to the Moon, which, you know, this is an attraction that I really don't know much about. I've seen footage of it. It's kind of like a round theater with like a kind of like a projection screen in the middle. And it was supposed to be like you were looking out as you like took off.
Yeah, it looks it. So it was I was actually watching the footage from when they opened mm-hmm. New Tomorrowland and in 67. And it looked like a round theater. And yes, you did have the screen that was kind of on the floor. So it looked like you could see where you had been, but then sure. They also had a screen kind of above so you could see where you were going. There were also some animatronic figures in there that looked like they were were controlling the rocket launch too.
Neat.
But past that little glimpse that I saw, I never experienced it and I don't know too much about it.
Back in the day though, in the 60s, I'm sure that they thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
Astrojets became the Rocket Jet, so mm-hmm. not like a huge difference there. And Circarama USA became CircleVision 360. And actually, didn't we see something about this in the Imagineering story too?
Yes, it was in the Imagineering story.
Yeah. I just remember them talking about like the technology of it, of how they had to mount the cameras and how like sometimes if it jammed or something, you'd have to throw all of it out mm-hmm, because like mm-hmm. it all has to be in sync. So,
I mean, the technology on that is just mind-boggling mm-hmm, to me. Mm-hmm. Just mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Well, one attraction was to be moved and improved, but it actually never happened. The flying saucers that were in Tomorrowland were going to be built, like moved and built to be housed under Space Mountain, but that never actually did happen.
Hmm.
I can't imagine, like, I just can't wrap my head around that.
So, remind me, what happened with Space Mountain? Because was Space Mountain supposed to open shortly after the new Tomorrowland? And then, like, did it get put on the back burner or something? Because it didn't open until the 70s.
Yeah, Space Mountain didn't end up going. It actually went to the Magic Kingdom first and then opened to Disneyland second.
Interesting.
I'm sure with everything, it was a budget issue, and it was also probably a technology issue, too.
Sure. And that's what you have written here, too, is you have that it was planned but not built till years later. Mm-hmm. So two new stages were built, kind of what I talked about when I was looking at that map, where the Tomorrowland stage, which was located kind of where the Tomorrowland Theater is now, like where mm-hmm. they play movies or whatever, previews. And then the Tomorrowland Terrace stage, which is still there. In fact, we talked about it earlier in the news segment. It doesn't have that distinct kind of topper any more on it, but I love the Tomorrowland Terrace stage. I think it's so cool that it comes out of the ground.
I know.
So
I think that's really cool too. And then, of course, there were six previously built attractions that did remain in Tomorrowland. There was the House of the Future, Tomorrowland Autopia, Skyway to Fantasyland, the Matterhorn bobsleds, the monorail, and Submarine Voyage. Back in the back corner.
Well,
there.
I wouldn't imagine 8 years after they put in the bobsleds, the monorail, and the Submarine Voyage that they would take them out.
Yeah, well, and they're still here today, so they're withstanding the test of time. I do find it interesting that they're kind of, I like that they've lumped the Matterhorn in, even though technically we all know that it's not really part of Tomorrowland, it's more part of Fantasyland.
The Matterhorn?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because, like, for a while that was part of Tomorrowland, and it's like, what does this have to do with tomorrow? And then they moved it into Fantasyland. Like, it's any of those attractions that are on a border, it's always kind of funny because it's
Well, and the Matterhorn is just kind of unique in itself, right? It's not really, it's not princessy, it's not futuristic. It just is. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I love it.
Well, the new Tomorrowland of 1967 was full of energy and movement, like we've talked about. And that kind of was a way that it kind of drew you in, you know? So as you're looking from the hub into the land, of course, you see the movement of the People Mover. There was the shiny spires we talked about that are actually under refurbishment mm-hmm. now, but in the concept look like they're coming back. That kind of drew us your attention like up. There was a beautiful blue sidewalk. This is back when Disneyland used to, they would what they called, they would slurry it, which was kind of like painting the concrete different colors. So that's how you knew what land you were in back in the day, is like they were colored different things. So now there's a lot of pavers, and depending on what land you're in, there's like stamped concrete and stuff like that, which I actually really like a lot better than just the slurried concrete. It adds a lot more theming. And then above your head was the modern and sleek track, of course, of the People Mover as you went in. And then, of course, it would draw you in further because you'd have the rocket jets on top of the station that had 12 smaller rockets revolving around it. That's cute that it was kind of Walt's idea that you have a giant rocket with all these little rockets going around it. I never even thought about that, actually. Interesting. And then, of course, Mary Blair. We talked about this when we talked about Mary Blair a few weeks ago, that she had the murals that added a nice warm color palette and a human touch to both sides of the main walkways into land. So I wish that they would uncover these and bring these back because they were very gorgeous.
The thing that I think I like the most about what this Tomorrowland had was that they had it. The Tomorrowland just felt like it had levels, and you really could see that kind of when you were at the back of the park, back by like where the subs were. So the base level would be the subs. Sure. Then of course, above that you had the monorail, the People Mover track, the rocket jets also back above the hub, like Tag was just talking about. You then had the Skyway buckets. And then of course, you know, top the peak of everything was the Matterhorn. There was just so many layers of so many different movement going on. Mm-hmm. And kind of back in that corner of the park, they really did layer on each other too, because you did have parts of the People Mover track that would kind of weave above and below where the monorail track was. And then of course you had the Skyway buckets above. And I just wish I could have been there for all of this.
One of the most amazing places in this Tomorrowland, especially like when I was a kid, is when the if you were on the monorail or the Autopia cars or on the People Mover, it was all like intertwined in that kind of back area. So even though, you know, we've talked a lot about how much space the Autopia takes up, it shared that space with the monorail and the People Mover. So it kind of utilized that space a lot better than it is now. So of course, also like the Disneyland Railroad goes by there. So there's tons of movement. Yeah. And then of course you have the Skyway buckets like you were talking about. I always forget about those. It's just amazing. Like, I wish I could go back in time and kind of experience this again and enjoy Disneyland of yore. But unfortunately, no. But I am hopeful and optimistic that whatever they choose to do next hopefully will be spectacular for Tomorrowland. Because I think Tomorrowland deserves another awesome remake like this 1967 one was. And I think that if they get somebody in Imagineering and they allow them to have kind of a budget and don't get afraid of things and just allow them to do something great, you know, because the new Tomorrowland was only 21 years ago they did it. I mean, only 21 years ago, but like, but like 1998.
Yeah.
So I feel like if you want something that lasted 30 years, like the 1967 one, you need to spend a lot of money and kind of have a good vision for it and have everything kind of, like we said, everything kind of has to work together, but also have its own little charm.
Mm-hmm. Well, as it's no surprise, but this Tomorrowland did become the most popular land at Disneyland. And a decade later, the popularity did, of course, explode all over again when Space Mountain opened. And it just had this really great complex that surrounded it. I mean, that the Space Mountain facade is iconic. A lot of people can just see the outside of that. I don't know, kind of looks like a UFO looking thing. You know, I don't know how to describe it, but it's just so unique and it's just so cool. When we were at the Howard Johnson, to be able to like look out from our hotel room and see it, like how they light it up at night, I just I think it's great. But I just love that Walt, even though he wasn't there physically, I think he definitely is in spirit, but Walt did get his Tomorrowland and he did get his space travel version of the Matterhorn, which I think is such a cool way to describe Space Mountain, the space version of the Matterhorn.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. The space version of the Matterhorn. I mean, I guess it's a tubular coaster inside a mountain, if you will. Mm-hmm. So I wish we'd go back to Tomorrowland being the most popular, because I think right now Tomorrowland is probably one of the least popular lands in the park.
Yeah.
Well, after probably Toontown, although people in our chat have said that like it's always busy back there.
Yeah, and Tomorrowland's always busy too. So it's hard because I think a lot of people go there definitely. Tomorrowland. I think a lot of people definitely go there for Star Tours and for, of course, Space Mountain. And really, the only time that buzz seems to be hopping is if the park is busy. Right. And same thing, Astro Orbiters seem to be kind of hit and miss. Mm-hmm. Autopia seems to be kind of hit and miss. Autopia is crazy popular with smaller kids.
Sure. Yep.
But yeah, and the subs, you know, those lines don't seem to be super long either. And unfortunately, that poor monorail can't seem to get its air conditioner figured out. So, and that's very difficult being in Southern California with no air conditioning in this big metal tube. But Tomorrowland definitely needs some TLC. And I just really, really hope that with this new kind of revitalized entrance, that this is just the beginning and that they're just going to keep going further and further back into the land and do, you know, keep up that momentum and energy and give it to the rest of the land too.
Yeah. Well, do you guys have any memories like I do of remnants of 1967 Tomorrowland, maybe like in the 80s when a lot of it was still there? Share it with us on social media. Shoot us an email, feedback@dlweekly.net. Let us know what you guys think of the new Tomorrowland of 1967. And maybe what are your hopes and visions for a new Tomorrowland to be built there? Or maybe even just your thoughts about the new entrance that they've unveiled concept art for. So I'm hopeful.
Me too.
Yeah. Well, if you enjoyed the show this week, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the show. By leaving a review, it helps get our ranking better and allows the community to grow.
Well, we hoped you enjoyed listening to this episode of DL Weekly. You can support the show for as little as 25 cents an episode. If you'd like access to our supporter chat, it's just 75 cents an episode. Please consider joining supporters like Laura R. and head over to dlweekly.net/support. Well, now it's time to return to Vern over in Trivia Land to get the answers to this week's trivia.
Even though I cheated. Apparently.
So early in the queue of indie, which Glenn Miller song do you hear? I was specifically looking for Moonlight Serenade.
Oh.
Which was the slower paced one that Teg did play. I accept the correction, and that's why I gave the half point that there is also In the Mood played after Moonlight Serenade. But Moonlight Serenade's my favorite, so my ears really picked up on that.
Sure.
One. For the population of Disneyland and the elevation of Disneyland, now again, this is all pertaining specifically to August 2019. If any numbers have changed, please feel free to write to us and let us know.
Well, I hope the elevation hasn't changed.
I certainly hope so as well. The elevation that I saw on the side of the train station was 138 feet.
Nope, you're absolutely right.
And the population was 650 million.
Wow.
I knew there was a 5 in there somewhere.
A little more than 8.5.
Yeah. 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 Anyway.
If I'm sitting down in Lafitte's Landing, where am I? I could be praying that I survive Pirates of the Caribbean. Specifically, if you're sitting in Lafitte's Landing, you are in one of the boats. And according to my hash marks, while we were in the queues in all of the rides at all of the attractions at Disneyland, Teresa chose the fast line roughly 50% of the time.
So that was two wins for you. Dang. Because not only did you do better than I thought you did, which is a win, but you also correctly guessed.
Those are the only two that I answered, too.
50% of the time, she's right. All of the time.
Yes.
If you have trivia that you would like to send to me or producer James for us to stump Tag and Teresa on your behalf, send an email at trivia@dlweekly.net.
We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.